Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Potomac Perspective. I'm Neil Shapiro, head of communications at Stifel, joined as always by our chief Washington policy strategist, Brian Gardner. Hi, Brian.
Good morning, Neil.
Brian, it was a late night, I'm assuming.
Late night, early morning, following last night's debate, which was quite something.
Yeah, well, we've talked before about the fact that this debate was so early in the cycle. Never seen anything this early.
And I mean, the two nominees aren't even officially nominees yet.
Yeah, correct. And you had said that, you know, the Biden folks were going for an earlier debate, to kind of shake things up because the polls had been so stagnant and some of the numbers were not going his way and they needed to do something to jumpstart the campaign. I think it's fair to say it worked against them. Would you agree that Biden's performance last night was troubling?
Very much so. So, you know, I went into the debate thinking that the Trump campaign had actually misplayed the expectations game. They had lowered the expectations for Biden to such a degree that, you know, he had a very low bar to clear and that he could win the expectations game. That clearly was not the case last night.
Well, it did, which is similar to what happened at the State of the Union, if you remember.
Yes.
But he did clear that bar.
He did clear that point. Last night, he reinforced every voter's anxiety about his ability to serve another 4 years and do the job. The optics were just terrible from the moment he stepped out on the stage, walking across the stage, haltingly shuffling his feet. And then when the debate actually started, not clear, a weak voice, an older sounding voice. And then it got worse from there.
Yeah. I mean, we try and stay out of politics and we try not to be partisan on the podcast, but even Biden's, you know, biggest supporters and some key Democrats, they're all talking about the performance. Nobody is happy with it. And the big question that's being asked this morning is whether or not Biden will make it to November. And I mean, make it stay on the ticket till November. So I guess the question, Brian, is do you think Biden leaves the race? And B, if that were to happen, how would it happen? Is there a mechanism in place to get him off the ticket? Should that be the way the Democrats push to go?
Well, I think your choice of words, Neil, is interesting because you talk about in terms of Biden leaving the race. That's his choice. And I think that's how people have to think about it. These theories that he would be pushed, that there's an active effort to push him off the ticket, ignores the reality of the rules of the Democratic Party. So we don't do smoke-filled rooms anymore. Those days are long gone. Maybe they should come back, but they're gone for now. And under the party rules, there used to be something they called they still call them superdelegates. These are elected Democrats from around the country, federal, state, local elected Democrats who are automatically delegates to the convention. Under revised rules from several years ago, those superdelegates who could influence and push him off the ticket, they are not allowed to vote in the first round. In the first round, Joe Biden will have 98% of the delegates, give or take, you know, a couple of points. It's clearly over 95% of the delegates. The party rules hold that committed delegates are required or bound by party rules to vote for the candidate to whom they are committed on the first ballot. Those delegates are handpicked by the campaign. They will all be Biden loyalists. So the idea that there is some effort, some outside effort to replace him, not by his own volition, at the convention, I just think is overlooks the logistics, not to mention who would get in. Mm-hmm. No one's going to want to jump in and be the first candidate in because that could kill their career. They will not be the nominee,
mm-hmm.
and it could kill their political career. So now it's Possible. I mean, I'm saying this morning there's about a 40% chance that he and his inner circle decide that he's going to step aside for the good of the country, that knowing that he cannot win at this point, in their view. And there're going to be some uncomfortable conversations. You know, and these are conversations that people across the country have all the time. Friends, family who, you know, are aging. And it's awkward and uncomfortable to have these conversations in a normal setting. We're talking about the presidency of the United States. So, you know, at the end of the day, will he step aside? I kind of doubt it. That's why I only have it at 40, not above 50-50. But it's clearly not zero. I mean, there's a definite chance it could happen.
So, two quick questions follow up onto that. So, if I'm hearing what you're saying, the only mechanism to really get him off the ticket would be a concerted effort to convince him that he needs to go.
Persuasion, not pushing.
Yeah, persuade. Exactly. Now, two questions on that. If that were to happen, we're just talking hypothetically here, but if they convinced him for the good of the country, for the good of the party, you need to step aside, would he then pick somebody or recommend or push his delegates to support a specific candidate, or does he then step away and it's a free?
So let's look at it in two. I'm going to give you two different scenarios, a pre-convention or convention, and then after the
That
convention.
was going to be my second question, was could this
Okay.
actually happen after the convention? You're going to answer both questions in one. I love it.
I'm
Very
preempting
efficient.
you.
Very efficient.
So
Okay.
if we get over the next couple of weeks between now and mid-August, when the Democratic National Convention takes place, and he decides he is going to step aside. I don't think he is going to be kingmaker, but his delegates at that point would become unbound, and it would become an open convention. At that point, you know, party elders and gray hairs in the Democratic Party do start to have an influence. They would be trying to put together a campaign for somebody. Now you start with the vice president. She would inherit the Biden campaign structure, the staff, the fundraising. I think Biden would try to help her, because it validates him picking her in the first place. I think she starts with a large advantage. It's not an insurmountable advantage, but it's a big advantage that people should not overestimate. Don't underestimate. Excuse me. People should not underestimate. I'm sorry about that. Like I said, it's not insurmountable, but it's big. And then other candidates will get in as well, and it becomes an open convention. We'll see how that plays out. If he does not drop out between now and the convention, and he, by the way, I should back up for a second. People forget he's actually going to be formally nominated before the convention. There's a little quirk in Ohio state law about the Democratic nominee getting on the ballot and the deadline in Ohio for ballot access. So in order for him to be on the ballot in Ohio, they have actually moved up the date. It's going to be a virtual vote. But that's a technicality, right? If all of this takes place after the convention, we go through the convention and the nominating process, and he is officially the Democratic nominee for president. And we get to late August, September, and he decides, had a heart palpitation, something just jogged him that he decided he needs to step aside. Then it is left up to the Democratic National Committee, and they would pick a replacement. That's
Interesting.
my understanding of Democratic Party rules.
Got it. All right. So now that we laid out those scenarios, I guess the question is, the way, what do you think happens next for both Biden? And then we haven't really talked much about Trump, because we've been so focused on Biden. But the truth is,
Which is a bad reflection of the debate last night for the Biden
correct.
campaign.
Correct. Because I don't
It
think
just
many
to
people.
reinforce the point.
Yeah, because I don't think many people would say that Trump, hit a home run. I don't think he hit it out of the park either, but we're so focused on Biden that we're not talking about Trump. But the truth is, as we look at the campaign, we've got all these questions now about Biden, but you've got Trump is going to be sentenced. You've got the Republican convention coming up. We still don't have an announcement on a running mate yet. So I'm not to steal your thunder, Brian,
I think you just did.
but well, you could give a lot more details than I can. So where do you see things?
So let's start on the Biden side, and then pivot to the Republicans and Trump. So Biden will be out on the road. They are going to try and his campaign will try and mitigate the damage from last night by having him out on the road, looking vigorous, engaged. And so he'll be doing campaign events and
Yeah.
travel.
The problem is 20 million people won't be seeing those the way they saw the
That
debate.
that's it. Yeah, it's only a handful of people that will be watching that in the news coverage in the coming days, and a lot of that will be overshadowed by the continuing post-debate commentary.
Yeah.
So there's that. On the Trump side, like you mentioned, he has yet to pick his vice presidential nominee. We don't know exactly when that's going to be, but obviously within the next month, next 2 weeks probably.
Well, he's not going to do it now because there's no way he's going to change the news cycle. He's going to let
Correct.
this
No,
go.
he'll let this go and let the news cycle play out. Co absolutely correct. July 11th, he is sentenced in New York. So maybe he does it around then to try and overshadow whatever news comes out of New York on the sentence. And then the following week, he has the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. So those are the big events, and he'll be doing campaign events between sporadically between now and the convention.
So, Brian, we've spent so much time talking about and so much focus on the optics, particularly for Biden last night. Do you think there were any policy takeaways from the debate last night? I mean, it wasn't a very substantive discussion.
Oh, it was a superficial
Yeah.
discussion from both. There was very little serious discussion of the issues. A credit to the CNN moderators. I think they tried to actually keep it substantive. I think the questions were actually pretty good. But the candidates, both of them, basically ignored the questions and went for the superficial comments. So no, I heard no substantive comments last night. I heard nothing new on economic policy. So there are not any clear takeaways other than the trajectory of the race is such that the prospects of a Trump victory are now higher than they were. I thought he probably had about a close to a 60% chance of winning. I think Nate Silver, who has left 538, but he's on his own. I think Nate Silver has it high, had it higher before last night. I think everybody has it higher this morning, that Trump will win. So, you start to factor in, what a Trump win means. We'll have the tax debate in 25 and 26, regardless of who wins. But this will have an impact on that. We've talked a little bit about the energy sector. Trump would be a deregulatory president, like he was in his first term. And as I put out in a note last week, and I've discussed with our Stifel colleagues who on the fundamental analysts who cover the sector, the irony is that even though Trump was seen as pro-energy, and I think an objective observer can say that. That doesn't tr necessarily translate into great market returns. Traditional energy actually underperformed during the Trump administration because allowing more supply, more drilling, more production lowered the price of energy, and it wasn't a positive outcome for the companies, at least in market terms. I think financials would do pretty well. There'll be some exceptions. I think private equity is not a big winner, despite the idea that Trump would be deregulatory on economic policy and financials. The fact is that you're going to have a more populist Trump administration if it comes to pass, and that's not good for private equity. Private equity is not beloved within populist circles. And then you have a couple of sectors, pharma, which got a little attention last night, and big tech. They don't have a lot of friends in Washington, so I don't necessarily think that they win under either scenario, whether Trump or Biden wins.
Yeah, there was really no mention of technology, no mention of AI, none of that.
That would, yeah, I was a little surprised by that. I thought that would shine through a little bit, but it didn't get any attention.
No. And what about M&A? Because we've made people have made the point that there's definitely been a slowdown in M&A. It's harder to get deals approved. The review process is a lot longer. I think the general consensus is that under a Trump administration, that would ease up a little bit. Would you agree with that?
So let's talk about it in terms of financials and non-financials. I'll start with the non-financials side of the world first. I do believe that that is the knee-jerk reaction, what you said, that the regulatory process, the antitrust review process would ease, and that is good for M&A. I want to see who gets appointed to run the Justice Department's antitrust office as well as the Federal Trade Commission.
Yep.
The populist wing of the Republican Party is ascendant, and they are very close with Trump. One of the more outspoken populists, who is on the VP list, J.D. Vance, Senator from Ohio,
Yep.
has called Lina Khan, the head of the FTC, the best Biden appointee, and has encouraged that she be reappointed. So, if Trump were to nominate somebody like that to run FTC or the DOJ's antitrust division, they both have antitrust merger review responsibilities. We won't go into the details of the differences, but they both do. That would not be a positive for M&A. On the financial side, banks in particular, I do think there will be some relief, especially for smaller banks, mid-sized banks. And maybe even some of the regionals. For the largest banks, what we refer to as the G-SIBs, the globally systemically important banks, the 6 to 8 biggest banks in the US, I don't think there's any M&A relief coming for them, regardless of who wins or loses.
All right, so Brian, last question. You've already said you're putting the odds at, what'd you say, 40%
About 40%, which means I believe the 60% that he will be on the
Right.
ticket.
So there is another debate that's scheduled for September, I believe. What do you, and I know a lot could happen. I mean, the news cycle moves very, very fast. And for all we know, the Biden camp could be saying we just need to ride out what's going to be a really tough week. And then no one will remember this back in August because 1,000 things will happen between now and August. Do you think we get, forget about the September debate, do you think we get another debate, assuming Biden stays in?
I'm skeptical at this point. It's tough to say right now, but I could see where the Trump campaign says, "Nope, that's enough. We've done it, and we're not going to do that again."
Yeah. All right. Well, Brian, there is a lot still to come, and we'll be here to break it all down. So thank you for jumping on and
Thanks, Neil. I think we should mention next week is the 4th of July, so
yeah.
happy Independence Day. We'll be
Yes.
back after the holiday. Keeping on the patriotic theme, Neil, we're getting close to the country's 250th birthday. So 2026 is approaching. So we're at 248. And so
And you
start
were
loading up
there.
on your fireworks for
Yeah.
your
And you
250.
were there, Brian. You were there from the beginning.
George Washington was a friend of mine.
Yeah. Although I will say, you talk about July 4th and happy Independence Day to everybody from me as well. We talked about how technology and AI didn't get talked about and there wasn't very a lot of substance. I will say that the military came up in last night's debate more than I think I've ever heard the military come up in any other debate.
Yes, but sadly they came up as a prop, which I
Yeah.
think is disrespectful to the men and women who served in the armed forces, who serve in uniform. It's a serious topic. Foreign policy, defense policy are serious topics, and they got mentioned a lot last night, but they were not mentioned in serious tones, and that's not good for the country.
Yeah. All
On
right.
that happy note, Neil.
Yes, exactly. Well, Brian, thanks again.
Thank you.
And thanks to, and I didn't even we had so much to talk about. I didn't even give you a hard time about the Mets sweeping the Yankees in the Subway Series,
But
but
you did sneak it in at the
I
end.
did sneak it in.
Well played.
But look, they still have the best record in definitely American League and possibly I think still in baseball, so you'll be fine. Anyway, thanks. Brian, and thanks to everybody for listening. Happy Independence Day. Enjoy your July 4th, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks with another episode of Potomac Perspective. Take care.